Hey everyone, welcome to the first episode of the Meet and Greet podcast. You ever been standing in line at a Comic-Con for hours and hours waiting to meet your favorite actor, actress, or hero? Finally, when that moment comes, you only have about 10 or 20 seconds before you say hi, get your picture taken, and move on? Well, that's what this podcast is designed for, so we can have a longer conversation with your heroes. My first guest on this episode is one of my personal heroes growing up. You know him from cartoons such as Animaniacs, where he played Yakko, Pinky from Pinky and the Brain, Donatello and Raphael from two variations of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and of course as Carl from Jimmy Neutron Boy Genius. I am so grateful and thankful that my first guest is none other than Rob Paulson. Thanks again for following, and we hope to see you at the very end. Please like and subscribe and share this video and enjoy the meet and greet. It's cool because we get to, you know, talk to you. Closest is people go to cons, right? And they get to meet you.
And there's no time.
Don't they get, 20 seconds in line before they have to move, take a picture and move on and shake your hand?
And you've seen in my lines, I want to stand up and be on the other side of the table with everybody because this is a privilege. I'm getting as much out of this as you. I get as much out of it, if not more, than the folks who are nice enough to come see me. And this is just this wonderful dollop of whipped cream on a career I never could have imagined would be this vital for this long. So cons are great and people are patient because they see that I speak to everybody. Sometimes it might be a minute, sometimes it might be 5 minutes.
My grandma's 93.
God bless her.
She's smart. Her body's starting to go, but her mind's sharp as a tack, man. And she handed me this folder, going to meeting celebrities and heroes. She handed me this folder or this manila, and I opened it up, and it's like all these playbills of when she went to go see shows in San Francisco, right?
Oh my God.
And like, I was just thinking, I was like, I got Zoom right now, but man, these people back in those days when you were, you know, two, they had to wait for concert tours or they had to wait for shows. I'm looking through it, and the names that stuck out to me was Mary Martin for South Pacific on tour in San Francisco. Rex Harrison for
My Fair Lady. Yep.
Not Julie Andrews. I think it was just Rex Harrison was touring.
Yeah.
And Phil Harris.
Oh my God.
I think Phil Harris was in South Pacific.
Yeah, and he was Baloo. The Bare Necessities.
Baloo, Little John, and Patu in Rockadoodle. If you want to.
That's right. God, I see. Also, my parents are both gone. If my mom and dad, my mom was the same age as Dick Van Dyke, or she would be, and they've been gone now for a while. But they always talked about, and probably like your grandma, talked about. Listening to radio dramas, and all those people were Broadway stars and radio stars, and they're still, I think they still have radio classics on Sirius XM. I don't know. Of course, they're all available, and you can pick old-time radio shows. You hear Mel Blanc, who's a regular on the Jack Benny program.
I posted a video of Christmas special of Jack Benny and Mel. I just edited Mel Blanc's parts where he's the guy who keeps changing the card and
starting the car. Oh my God! Fantastic. And
English horse.
Watch him on the Tonight Show. He was on Letterman. Oh my God! I got to work with him once, and it freaked me in the coolest way because we were doing a Jetsons project.
I was about to ask, was it for the Jetsons movie or?
Yeah, it was. And he was Mr. Spacely. And I played Judy's boyfriend in this Hanna-Barbera Jetsons movie. And we even had, I don't remember his name, but George O'Hanlon, who played George Jetson. He was in his 80s at the time and actually died just at the end of the recording of that movie in mid-80s, I think, late 80s, early 90s. Anyway, I got to work one day, and in those days, the shows were all directed by Gordon Hunt, who's Helen's father, and a wonderful acting coach, great friend. It was so good to me. I got to work, and Gordon said, "Hey, Robbie, Mel's here." And I said, "You know, I thought that was him through the glass, but I didn't." He said, "Yeah, he's just you two. You want to go sit next to him?" Yeah. So I then Mr.
No,
Bright.
No, it's okay. Let him do his
yeah.
thing.
And I said, "Of course." He could not have been nicer. He was probably late 70s. So it wasn't long before he passed away, but he was, you know, old, but as soon as he opened mouth, didn't matter. And I said, "Mr. Blank, like anyone with a pulse, I am such a fan, and you've meant so much to me in my life and my career. Thank you, young man." So I thought, well, I'll never get this chance again, John, I thought. So, "Mr. Blank, if it's not too much trouble," and he knew exactly what I wanted, takes off his glasses, goes, "Yeah, what's up, Doc?"
Yeah.
And I thought, like, I need a seizure salad. I'm gonna pass out. And so now, while I would never compare myself to Mel, nor would any of our contemporaries, I get it. If I say "Nerf" or "Hi, how's it going? You know, stay away from Jimmy's mom." It's remarkable the power of those characters.
And the thing I've learned about you is that it's the thing I've learned about you is that it's easy to get you going, whether you be in United States or Canada.
That's right.
Or Mexico or
shutting
Panama.
Shutting me out. Haiti. Or Panama or Haiti, Jamaica, or even Peru. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And it's the best part of it.
You get iconic voice actors like Mel Blanc and Peter Cullen, as you've mentioned before, but the characters that they're playing, you know, I was just having this thought the other day, characters like Fred Flintstone and Yogi Bear are kind of falling on the wayside because my generation, or the generation after my generation, don't know who Jackie Gleason or Art Carney are.
Exactly right.
You know, and my question to you was really going to be, what characters do you think that are either out there now or characters that you played other than the Turtles, because those guys aren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
What characters other than the Turtles like are going to be like staple characters? Like, do you think someone's going to rehash Yakko at some point in
life?
That's
a great question. That is the first time I've been asked that. I don't dare
you
to
hear that, podcast people, if I'm going to post this.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? You can post it. I don't care. Yeah. That's a great question. And I've never been asked it. And it's difficult to allow me the ego to say, "Oh yeah, this one is going to be around," because I never thought that any of these would get this far. I could lay claim to arguably five characters, two of which are Turtles, but Yakko, Pinky, and Carl. Carl is one. I don't know that they'll ever reboot it, but for some reason,
he's so off the wall. Yeah,
love. Carl, every day that seems like there's another meme. I meet people, usually younger folks, maybe 30 and under, who just frickin' love Carl. So if there's a reboot someday, because that was a very good show, it was smart. The characters are all good. It spawned a movie that earned $100 million and was nominated for an Oscar, and two spin-off series. So that's entirely possible that they do it again. I would like to think Pinky and the Brain have that kind of staying power, but there's so much product now that getting anything made itself is a remarkable experience. Also, the cost of doing it is very expensive, especially if you want to do it at a high level. That's why Pinky and the Brain and Animaniacs, I'm very proud of the characters that I'm lucky enough to perform, but I don't draw them and I don't write them. And a big part of that whole equation is Steven. Because when you have Mr. Spielberg, right off the bat, if Steven says, "Okay, we're going to do this like Looney Tunes, we're going to have a 40-piece orchestra for every half hour. Every half hour. Just like Kill the Wabbit, all of it." And we did in both iterations, only because we had the King of Hollywood running the show.
Yeah.
So it's And there are many shows with great music. Family Guy, Seth is a great singer. I don't know if they have the same type of orchestra stuff that we do. They might, because that's a big show. The Simpsons music is a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Well, Danny Elfman and you know, wrote that. And Seth MacFarlane's big jazz band radio, you know, radio guy, too. You're going to
hear him. He's a great singer. And he's got a killer voice, terrific acting, smart. So I would, the usual suspects would the ones I would be, I would consider. But Turtles, I have to push to the side because, as you said, those characters are, I don't see that thing slowing down. It's 40 years old. We, that is the four original guys, are still in great shape. We all still work. Yeah. We show together at shows, and it's the coolest thing. But nobody ever expects to have a show that has this kind of staying power at maybe half a dozen TV iterations and probably getting on to 10 films now, and I don't know how many games. And
well, yeah, the Turtles are very interesting just because I've noticed, I mean, they started in the 80s, but they're on their Rise is the fourth iteration of it?
Fourth or fifth, and now there's another one.
Right, but it changes with the times, too. So, like, I view, like, you know, what generation are we talking about here? Well, what season Turtles are you watching? You know, that's kind of what you're talking about. Because you were directing Rise.
Yeah.
And Rise.
It's remarkable.
Yeah.
I did. And a great example of how this, well, you already know that there's a lot of stunt casting and a lot of big time film and TV stars who are hired to work. Usually, I have to say now, on the things on which I've worked and where they hire big celebrities, more often than not hire really good actors now instead of just somebody for the sake of their, like, they're a regular on the new Disney Afternoon or the new Disney Channel teen show. So they'll get the sort of Ariana Grande at 15 years old to come and be the voice of some character only because she's Ariana Grande and they want to cross promote. Totally get that. However, my experience with both the 2012 Turtles and Rise was they brought some big freaking stars.
Mm-hmm.
When we were doing 2012, there was a recurring character in a 13 episode arc called Fugitoid. And it was I went to work one day and I said, "Hey, we got Fugitoid in this script." We got somebody kind of a surprise. And I said, "Who?" "David Tennant." And I said, "David Tennant." Okay. I don't know anything about Doctor Who, so he gets to work, and you know, David, man, what a pleasure. And I've met him at cons, but he doesn't know who I am. And one thing led to another, and I know.
Tell him about that, Rob. You'd be surprised how many people know you.
Well, thank you. But it was he could tell where I was going, and where I was going is, "I'm glad you're here, but why are you here?" You know, you're not, because I still have, and most of us do, still have this sort of redhead to stepchild. It's not negative anymore because animation has become huge, but we look at on-camera talent, especially really successful ones, as a different animal. Because fame being a celebrity in that realm always has cachet. It's always different. But it's changing because of what we're doing now, podcasts. I go to shows, people put clips, and they go, "Oh, that's the guy. I met him," and I get recognized on the street.
Yeah. What's that questionnaire you go through? Who's Rob Paulson?
Yeah, it's the who's Rob Paulson? Get me Rob Paulson. Get me a Rob Paulson type. Get me a younger Rob Paulson. Who's Rob Paulson?
Yeah.
And I'm at the younger Rob Paulson place, which is a huge – I'm flattered. So David, you know, he beat me to the punch. He says, "Listen, this is Ninja fucking Turtles, mate. Everyone wants to be on the fucking Ninja Turtles." And, of course, he's probably, I don't know, 50. He's younger than I by a significant amount, 10, mm-hmm. 15, 20 years maybe. So he totally knows turtles. And he's like, oh no, I couldn't say yes fast enough. Same with John Cena, same with Lena Headey, same with one of the guys I used to watch when I was a kid, same age, Johnny Rotten, John Lydon from Sex Pistols, was played a bad guy on Rise. And they all wanted to be part of Turtles.
Yeah.
So
And now
that,
Mutant Mayhem, they had Jackie Chan
oh
as
my
Splinter.
God, and it was produced by Seth Rogen. He's doing another one.
Perfect. Yeah, it's perfect.
So yeah, and it's now become a much bigger deal to be involved in animation. I mean, The Simpsons alone is the longest running scripted show in the history of the medium. That,
I mentioned before, like the characters like Yogi Bear, Fred Flintstone, based on the
yeah.
Honeymooners, right? And I read
Right.
your book, and
Oh, you did. Okay, well, you
my
still get one.
oh, okay, great. My favorite part about that book is when you were talking about doing the mask, and you got a little miffed at the producers because they were like, "He doesn't sound like Jim Carrey," and. So the question that brought up the two questions came from that for me was where do you find that line between creativity or imitation and creation? Because other than
Excellent question.
from where I'm sitting, the only character I really hear you imitate or steal from, as you put it, is
Yeah.
Dr. Scratch and Sniff
Sure.
as Dr. Strangelove. The guy who
Right.
didn't do it, but
Yeah. And I tell people as much. Yeah.
Yeah, you freely admit I'm stealing it, you know.
Sure.
So but you know, in the book you say you didn't want to be like Jim, but that you knew they wanted Jim. So where's creation and your own stamp?
Great question and an excellent anecdote I'll be able to share with you in a bit.
All right.
Maybe I even mentioned the book, I don't remember, but yeah, when I got that job, I was thrilled because for a guys like you and me, you get to improvise. The mask, by definition, the ethos of that character is puts on the mask, and he might be a pirate, or he might be a cowboy, or he might be a whatever. He might be Cuban Pete, you know, boom. And Jim is fucking Jim. Okay, so I got the job, thrilled to death, and the first five episodes, maybe more. Miffed is a good word. I didn't get angry. I was getting frustrated because we all want to please people. Once you get the job, you've gotten past the, I hope I get the job. Now it's, oh, don't fuck it up, don't fuck it up, you know, all of that. And so I knew it was a big deal because it was CBS Saturday morning. It was on the heels of The Mask. So New Line was there, CBS was there, Film Roman was there. They were the animation house. They still did The Simpsons. And I would do it, do a couple of gags, and their parts would say, Stanley puts on the mask, Rob improvises. Great. I love that. And or they would say, here's the line, we hired you because you got pretty good improv chops and you're not afraid to try stuff. Off you go. So I would do that, and then they would have, you know, hang on, Rob. Yeah, no. And then if you see, and you know this, if you see somebody on this side of the glass pointing, and on the one hand they're this, and then they point at you and they go, and inevitably, actors, because we're by nature sensitive creatures, which helps us, but it's also a difficult thing because the first thing you think of is, they're shaking their head, looking at me. They could be saying, oh no, I don't, I disagree. He's killing it. And
That's not what you hear. You just see
you hear, you know, yeah, can you make a call to Rob's agent? And okay, then they would come back and say, Rob, that was great. But in the movie, when Jim, and I said, okay, and okay. Well, finally, it was Tim Curry, God bless him, who was on that show as, oh, I forgot the name,
I don't know the
Skeletor.
villains. I know he has the head that pops off, and
Right, right.
yeah.
Yeah. And I worked with him as well on Mighty Max. He played a character called Skullmaster. And anytime you get to work with Tim fucking Curry. So Tim, he could see, he said, Rob, you know, You really owe it to yourself. We're taking a break. You owe it to yourself to go to the producers and very calmly say, look, I know you could probably feel a little frustration on my part. It has nothing to do with you. It's me trying to give you what you want. And I feel like maybe I'm missing the mark. So can we talk about it? And he was right. So I did just that. They could not have been mice. So they said, you're doing great. I said, okay, I believe you. And all I if you guys come to the point where you say, we love you, Rob. We're kind of figuring this out too. We're gonna maybe move on to somebody else. No problem. It happens. Everybody gets replaced. I can take a punch. No problem. I just don't want to assume anything until I know I've given you everything you ask for, and for some reason, I'm not cutting it. Not a problem. I really, it's okay. No. Okay. And I said, if that's true, and I believe you, let me go. Let me play, because respectfully, I would understand you'd want Jim. He's not going to do it unless you give him $100 million or 20 or even
Per
$5 million,
episode,
what
yeah.
have you. Okay. I believe I can do this. You guys do too. But what I'm doing, if we have one season, 13 episodes, that means I'm doing like 4 hours worth of Jim Carrey in the movie, which was 2 hours. So there are things you're going to ask me to do that Jim never did. And we don't know what his take would be, because we're now in the fifth or sixth episode, which means we're now at 6 half hours. We're now at 180 minutes of Mask. And every time you come up with a new thing for Stanley to inhabit, Jim hasn't done it. Now he's a mummy. Smoke it. Who knows? And you know what? They could not have been nicer. They said, you're right, we're kind of overthinking this. And I said, well, I am too. But just, I'll tell you what, give me maybe 3 or 4 sessions where you just let me rock and roll. And I will tell you as well, oh, I got something else. And let me try that too. Because I want to leave you with an embarrassment of riches. I want to make it difficult for you to choose which take to use.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of the Mask Show.
Thank
And
you.
fans remember the darndest things, right?
Isn't that
So
something? Me too.
you may not remember this, but maybe you do. There was a crossover episode of the Mask
Yes.
where he meets Ace Ventura.
We shot it, we did it in Toronto because that's where they recorded Ace Ventura.
Yeah, so I have his name. Michael Dangerfield was Ace
Yeah.
Ventura. Did you two share kind of like the same? Do you think you two share like the same moment of, look, they really want Jim? I asked, you told the story. I went up to them and said, let me do my own thing. Did you kind of coach Michael on that, or did
I
he
did
already
not. In
have his?
fact, I don't think I ever met Mike. I went up there because the company who did that Ace Ventura cartoon is a company called Nelvana, and they're based in Toronto. Cree Summer, Tara Strong, Mo, Jim, Howie Mandel, all those folks work for Nelvana because they're all Torontonians. They all came
Just
from
a
there.
pause. I love Cree Summer.
Oh
If
my
I could talk
God.
to her.
Have you even met her?
I've never met her. I want,
Oh,
it's on my,
John.
like, Tara's on there too, but I mean, Cree.
She is so fucking smart,
Oh.
so talented. She opened on a European tour years ago with her own album. She opened for Lenny Kravitz, and Lenny produced the record.
Wow.
And Cree, oh my God, no, she is the definition of badass. She of
She's
trash.
also like one of those chameleons where you're like, I love that. Oh, that was her? She was Penny from Inspector Gadget? What?
And she was Elmira from
I knew that. Yeah,
Tiny
that
Toons.
was.
I mean, and Foxy Brown on Drawn Together. I mean, she can do anything, and a fucking amazing singer.
I have
So
that
that's
moments with you too. I'll be watching a cartoon. I'll be like, "Rob, is that you? Are you foul mouth? You're foul mouth
Yeah,
right
that's
now."
me. I sent him in. I
Yes.
had a blast. But and the I got to sing the Mask theme song, which is one of the
Yeah,
most spectacular themes I've
yeah.
heard. killer arrangement, killer song. And check this out. As a result of Tim sort of saying, just go talk to him. You're doing great. They don't quite know what they want. And, you know, they're trying to justify their jobs because they don't want to fuck it up. There's a lot of money going into this. So it's, you know, and they could not have been nicer. And then I got a call from Judy Price after the show. They started seeding episodes and everybody's comfortable. And wow, Rob's doing just fine. And we did another season. They had somebody else ready to sing the theme song. And then Judy Price, who was the head of CBS Children's TV at the time, called up and she said, wait a minute, you're a singer. You're singing all those songs in Animaniac. Do you want to sing the theme song? I said, well, I would love to. I didn't dare to ask because that's, you know, you're the boss. Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you do a demo? And they loved it. And it is probably the best performance of a theme that I've ever done because they let me go. And I got to do mask stuff in the context of the song. It's a 60-second great arrangement of a killer original tune. And it was only because Tim had said, just give yourself the luxury of letting him know. And if he had not suggested that, I don't know that I would have had the courage to say something that I would have been afraid might have backfired on me, as though I was being a diva. And I thought, you know what? This is Tim fucking Curry. This isn't helping him.
This is legend, darkness. This is.
He's doing this to help.
Was he Captain Hook at the time? After Peter Pan and the Pirates?
Yeah. And a great guy. And, you know, God bless him. He had a major stroke years ago, but spot on. Last year at New York Comic Con, he was there and I, in the green room, and I said, Tim, hi, it's Rob. He goes, I don't know who you are, you fucking idiot. And I almost got tearful. I said, oh, Jesus, Tim. Give me a hug.
The original question, I guess, I would say that your answer, a long-winded answer, which is great, I love it, is imitation would be the bedrock of, like, so you were kind of imitating Jim.
Absolutely.
But at some point, you got to be like, okay, we got the foundation. Now let's build. Right. And that's where the creativity comes in.
Exactly. Because once I took advantage of Mr. Curry's suggestion, it was like, oh, you know what? You got a great point. We're gonna not get our panties in a bunch. And the fact is, most of the time, you probably know this or you will, that the people behind the glass, or even if you're doing live action, because that's how I started, are spending a lot of time trying to make sure CYA, it's making sure they have covered their ass, and then nobody comes and says, well, John, you were the production coordinator. Why didn't you blah, blah, blah? So they do that. And I've had directors, in this case and live action, take me aside and say, Rob, if that person from Jack in the Box, who's the, you know, the
fring guy.
Right. So we're doing a bunch of commercials. That lady from the advertising agency is lovely. Mm-hmm. And here's what I mean. I love telling this because I have an anecdote for every issue, which leads to our creativity area. Yeah. I was doing my, you've seen the, it was frings. It was, Helen Keller could do it. I looked like the fresh-faced young guy that day, and it was a great gig, and I got my SAG card, made some, okay. But literally, the first one I shot, it was, hi, welcome to Jack in the Box. I mean, it was that. Great. Okay, Rob, looking good. Let's go again. And the director's name was Hobby Morrison. I'll never forget him. So we've probably done 15. Hi, welcome to Jack in the Box. Chat, chat, chat. Okay, Rob, we're going to go again. Let's reset, blah, blah, blah. Give Rob a new bag of frings, whatever. And you could see that after like...
Change his hat. We're in Christmas time.
Totally.
Yeah.
So we get to like 15, 20 takes. And then you start to think, holy shit, they hired me, but I can't get this right. Well, it's nothing to do with me. But I was 23. So hobby, that's what they talk about, an actor's director, and it's whether it's on camera or voice work. Took me aside and said, Robbie, you're doing great. The lady had just come up this time. She said, he was getting ready to roll, and he said, Hobby, hang on a second. Sorry, Rob. She comes up, and I have a name tag on. It's not Rob. It's Ralph or Ed or whatever. And she says, she literally, John, takes my name tag and goes, okay, Hobby. And inside, I'm thinking, are you fucking kidding me?
I did 18 takes with a crooked name tag. Wow.
So Hobby took me aside, Hobby, we got this in the first three takes. I've worked with these people all the time. I cast you. You're great. If they ask you to stand your head, pick your nose, and say it with your name tag stapled to your forehead, go ahead and do it. Because you're getting paid whether you're here for an hour or 8 hours.
Yeah.
So, and I said, oh, I'll do it all day, Hobby. He goes, of course you will. Of course you will. Just don't worry about them. That was such good information at 23, and it's still true. If I'm working with somebody who's got a lot on their plate, it's a big deal, the reboot of Animaniacs.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason we were included is because Steven said, oh, no, this isn't about making Liam Neeson the brain and Russell Brand Pinky. This is about the authenticity of the characters. And Rob and Tress and Jess and Mo do it. They do it great. Rob can still sing. No problem. Okay, so, but the young woman whom they hired to direct us was freaking out. So I and Tress got to do the opposite. Walk into these 25-year-old, 30-year-old writers who, when they heard, hey, God, blah, 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 they'd start to weep going, oh, my God, Pinky said my words. But you could see that they're, you know, and so I could go in and say, look, you're going to be great. We really know what we're doing. And we also know that there's a lot in terms of the zeitgeist we don't know. So if you're writing jokes that appeal to folks your age, great. But there will be times where we don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
But
oh, yeah.
You're doing great. Yeah.
The best acting advice I ever got was go as big as you can until the director tells you to call back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good for you. I especially yeah. voice work. Especially
I learned that at 16.
Excellent. That's yeah. so because that's what Andrea used to say to people all the time. Andrea Romano.
Oh, Andrea Romano. Yeah. Ah, love her.
Oh yeah, and you would love her. She just had her birthday in December. But when and we all came up together. We're the same age.
Yeah.
She used to be Gordon Hunt's assistant at Hanna-Barbera. And so when I'm working with, especially in those days with movie and TV people who come in, Gordon would say, Jonathan, you know what? You can't be too big because you're used to having a camera here and you
yeah.
raise your eyebrow and you can get the same reaction as what?
And you get in your own headspace too of, oh, am I overshadowing that?
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's just, and I was told, always, I was playing, you're going to love this. I was playing, it was a church production of Narnia. It was a music.
And I got to be C.S. Lewis. Yeah.
Yeah. And I got to play the dwarf.
Oh my God.
And this is a church that didn't know who I was. And I was just like, just getting into acting.
Yeah.
I've been doing a couple. I did South Pacific as like a.
Are you a singer too?
Yes.
Yeah, because you've got you. Are you a baritone? Because you have a. I think I probably told you this when I first met you. You have a very clear voice and very.
Thank you.
You're. I mean, you enunciate so clearly. You can tell that you've been.
I told you, but the worst piece of advice I ever got was actually from my father. I love him. I don't mean this in a disparaging way. But the worst piece of advice I ever got was from my dad. And he said, make sure you always get a paycheck. And to me, that meant always have a job, which
yeah.
prevented me from, like, that's when I get in your own headspace. To me, that was just like, okay, I can't move to LA until I save this much money to become a voice actor. Okay, I didn't make, now I'm 38. I landed a job. We talked about this, where I was helping kids on the spectrum with their
Oh,
developmental issues.
welcome to the club. The number of times all of us have maybe had 2 day jobs that you could were kind of manipulable, so that you could be available for auditions. I remember working at a record store when I first got here, and I got a call back for something. I'd been working there maybe 6 months, and I had always been able to get somebody to cover me if I had a call. And this one's like a third call back for a big deal. I didn't get it, but I remember the boss said, "Well, I don't know, I you can go, but if you don't come to work, I gotta replay you. I gotta fire you."
I have here Mark Hamill is on record for saying, "I love doing voiceover work because the audience can't see you." Do you feel the same way?
Well, I do.
Not in terms of Comic Cons, but in terms of performance.
Yeah. Well, what I love about it, in fact, we're talking. I started on camera doing. In those days, it was MacGyver and St. Elsewhere and Hill
Saint
Street and
Elsewhere, yeah, with that.
all kinds
Did
of
you do
commercials.
Bobby's World with Howie?
I did Pat Fraley and I, who knows Joe Mantegna very well. Pat Fraley and I did Bobby's World with Howie. I think I probably did 25 or 30 episodes.
Saint Elsewhere came first, but I don't know if you two work, you and Howie worked together.
Yeah, I didn't work with Howie on St. Elsewhere. I did more stuff with.
I'm using first names, like I know the guys too,
Oh yeah, he's also a great guy. But what I when I first did when I did my first cartoons, which were G.I. Joe and Transformers, the first thing I noticed was, wow, I know a lot of these people from episodic television when I was a kid, and this is the purest form of play acting. Okay, John, you're going to be the monster. I'm going to be the monster hunter, and B.J. Ward is going to be the doctor who helps me find the monster. And nobody cares what we look like. And because with a non-celebrity talent, it's first about, do you look like you could be the son of the guy they hired to be your dad? Can you fit the suit? Well, in this case, I got hired for things that I would never have been considered for were this an on-camera production. And I'm so glad that I took my wife's advice and said, look, it's not that I think you're difficult to look at, but you're getting a ton of work with your voice, and you're good at it, and you get to sing, and you get to do dialects. And I thought, I don't, on camera, I get to be a government guy or a cop or a young father, and I take on
And
a
it'd probably be
character.
easier to have like three jobs at a time as well, as opposed to
Totally.
being on screen. So one of the
So,
segments I'm going to do on my podcast is called My First Time. My
great.
first time with Rob Paulson.
Hey, fair enough. I hope I'm gentle.
You're very dumb. I had a
No
chance to
dinner and no
meet
movie either.
I had a chance to meet Joe Mantegna a couple months ago.
Oh, isn't he lovely?
He's so fun. And he kind of had a moment with you had with Mel Blanc. I had with him, and I was telling him, "Hey, I want to start this podcast, and here's an idea I had. It's called My First Time." And my first time with you, Joe Mantegna, was with a movie called Searching for Bobby Fischer.
Oh, sure.
And
And
then,
excuse me,
yeah.
my wife's best friend's father shot that movie. He was a
Oh,
director of photography. Isn't that
he
a
was so
great
excited
movie?
to talk about the writer because he went on to do Schindler's List.
Yes.
But my moment with him was like what you had with Mel Blanc. It goes, I say my second time would probably be you on The Simpsons, and I and he just leans in, and he just instantly goes into character.
That's great. Isn't that
I
great?
don't get mad, I get stabby, and I just like, oh, is
Is
anyone
it?
else in line hearing this?
I know,
No.
and I get the same way. I've known Bill Farmer for 35
Oh
years,
gosh,
and
Goofy.
if he says, "Oh, I just smile, and I never get tired of it, and never. It's overwhelming to me." And
So my first time with Rob Paulson, we talked about it time and time again, is the Great Bible Adventures, where
oh,
you
with.
played Moki,
Yeah, the
as
greatest
you refer
adventure.
to in your book as the Bible Show.
Yeah, Moki. It was
Moki.
yours truly, Terry McGovern, whom you guys would know as Launchpad McQuack, and a beautiful actress named Darlene Carr, Carr.
Read the book because there's a great segment, or your book rather, your book,
Oh,
because you
thank
talk
you.
about that's Hanna-Barbera's way of getting the gospel out there.
Right, because Joe Barbera was a devout Catholic, and this was his pet project, and I had literally done a show for them before that, which thrilled me because it was Johnny Quest, and I used to love that show, and I played Haji, who was a sort of a little East Indian boy, and yes, folks who are listening to this fabulous podcast, it's a different time, and if
I was
the
going to ask.
Opportunity came up to do Haji again, I would very respectfully say, there are, I can give you three wonderfully gifted East Indian Pakistani actors who could nail it, and you can just go through agents and get a bunch of them. I understand that, and I respect that.
That was my hot button question for you, you know, because Moki and Haji, I don't want to say they were the exact
same.
They
were very
voice,
similar.
But they're very similar, and, you know, you got the snow on the roof and...
yeah, and totally, and the guy, I'm sure
the demographic
Mr.
is different.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
And Mr. Barbera probably said, hey, what's that kid's name, Ron, who does Moki? I mean, who does Haji? Hit him. He sounds great. And so it was wonderful. I think we did about 12 of them. But, man, I got to work with Helen Hunt before she became Oscar winner Helen. Ed Asner. Oh, my God. Ruth Buzzy.
You got to work with. Did you work with James Earl Jones on that one too?
Yes,
the
James
Pharaoh
and Peters, James Earl Jones,
Robbie Benson was.
Yep,
David,
Carol
David
Channing.
Wyatt.
Carol Channing. I mean, it was spectacular. And so that's another one of those where, animation-wise, it didn't matter what I looked like. It didn't matter with Pinky or Yakko or Dr. Scratch and Sniff or the mask or the tick or any of that. We're only limited in those circumstances, the glorious animation circumstance, where we're limited literally by our chops, by the kindness of people to consider us, and our willingness to, as Billy West says, be fearless. Because you're not going to look stupid. You might sound weird or stupid, but I got so many gigs, and I can think of three or four off the top of my head that I did because I wasn't afraid to sound different than what they said they wanted.
Come full circle a little bit. That's kind of like what Mark Hamill was saying. You know,
exactly.
The audience can't see you.
Doesn't matter. So they're not going to look.
You can do, be scared like this.
Right.
And you can't do that on camera.
Oh, you can. Or, you know, if your teeth are chattering, you take a pencil and go, yeah. So, exactly. Kevin Conroy, handsome guy, but not a movie star, but to millions, including my son, he is the definitive Batman. He and Mark.
Absolutely.
That's it.
And I think he could have played Batman because I did a live. Well, he technically did later on in the like a crossover series, but I saw him. I was watching. Get this, Rob. I was watching Cheers.
Oh, yeah, he was on Cheers.
He's this buff baseball player.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the? Kevin Conroy's got biceps as big as my face. What?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And
I'm so glad you brought him up, too, because I want that kind of led to my last off-the-wall career question for you is you've been playing Yakko. You've been playing Pinky. Not so much Carl's a lot anymore.
Right.
You've been playing all these characters for so many years. Kevin Conroy played Batman for over 30 years.
Isn't that crazy?
And kind of going back to talking about the mask and this is, you know, where you can step in and be creative. At what point do you think you can put your foot down and say, Pinky would never say this, or Pinky would say narf in this situation?
You know what?
Or, like, where is it yours?
Okay, that's another excellent question. I will never do that because, as I've said, I don't draw them, I don't write them. I'm really good at my job, and I should be. I've been doing it forever, and I work every day to get better. But I'm a hired gun, and if you write this piece and you have Pinky saying something that Pinky's never said, or even something I might sort of go, God, I don't know, I'll do it. And then I'll say, diplomatically, before we move on, is there something else? Do you mind if I try something? And I've never had a director or a writer say, nah, we're good. Never. The worst they can do is say, yeah, I like what I wrote better. But every show that I've worked on in which both sides of the glass have had deep respect for each other, irrespective of whether an ad lib makes it or a writer pulls rank and says, no, I want my line in there, the creative energy involved with the mutual respect makes ends up on the screen. Every time I've done that,
sure.
The Mask, Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain a lot with the non sequitur responses to, are you pondering what I'm pondering? And many of those were written. And then they'd say, I'd say, hey, I got one. Sure. Sometimes
recycled it ended up Bonville, kind of. You
yeah.
Know, I love it. Yeah.
Sure. All of it. And that's my jam. I love to play. And I'm surrounded by super gifted people who hand me things. Pat Fraley all the time on Bobby's World and Ninja Turtles. He played Casey Jones and Krang and one other guy. Anyway, Burn Thompson. Anyway, and Pat would hand me little, Rob, next time on this line, say this. And I'd say, hey. And people would break up or say, eh, it's a little too edgy, no problem. Or they say, that's great, Fraley. And they love that stuff because it shows you're thinking and you don't want to leave without doing your best. And so I'll never say, look, Pinky wouldn't say that because I don't want to offend a writer who's worked as hard on that as I have.
Sure.
And so I am not going to probably ever do that because for instance, as Pinky and the Brain became bigger and Animaniacs, they would trust me. They would say, you know, hey, Rob, this is what we've got here as a placeholder. Can you come up with something? Because they trusted
me. There's a respectability for allowing an actor to improv because you know they can. You know, you're not going to go up to Robin Williams, rest in peace, and just be like, we want you to stick to the script exactly word for word. You're going to want Robin to go off.
Right. And the worst that can happen is that I come up with something they don't like. No problem. And it doesn't bother me at all. It's their dime. You know, they're paying me what I'm asking for. And if they say, you know, we're going to throw out the whole last page and rewrite it and we'll pick it up later. Fine. If there's something in there that I don't think Pinky would say, unless it's really offensive, but that wouldn't be the case because that show doesn't lend itself to being Family Guy.
No, not at all. I'm very much a 6 degrees of separation kind of guy. So, like, if I think I'm following you on Instagram. I don't think you're following me, but that's okay.
I will if I'm not. Also, you know what? To the extent it might help, any time that you have someone you want to get a hold of, and you just let them know that we're friends. I've been on your podcast. We know each other. Sometimes that helps other people.
I name drop and, like crazy. It's a
listen,
bad habit. Yeah.
You can steal this because I stole it from Dave Coulier. I got to stop dropping names. Bob De Niro told me that. And I use anybody you want. You know, if you know it's funny.
On my TikTok account, it's really weird. I don't know how this happened, but if you go to Bob Saget's TikTok account, he's got 23 followers, and for some odd reason, I'm one of them.
Cool.
I never met the guy. I never even posted something about him. He just decided to follow me, and you know, then the guy passes away. I'm like, I'm not unfollowing.
But, that's right.
That's the other thing that kind of sparked me to kind of do this to get the podcast going is because TikTok's might be going away in January.
I know.
I don't know what I'm gonna. I don't know what I'm gonna do.
And you know what? Those twists and turns. No one gets out of here, John, without a couple of dings. You could be 60 years old and be a voice actor, and all of a sudden, what? Throat cancer. So it's a valuable tool to have that resilience. And that's what I said at the beginning. You have to continually embrace the hustle because you're doing it for the noblest of reasons. It's because you can't not do it. And it's the same with me still.
Rob, you answered every question that I had for you, and this including the podcast stuff. Thank you for doing stuff like, I mean, on behalf of all the people that can say or that can't meet you because of whatever reason, they can't afford the ticket, they can't
Well,
afford the
thank you, John.
Christopher Titus, who's a stand-up comedian, quotes
Sure, I
Dan
know Chris.
Carvey.
Yeah.
You know Chris?
Well, I know him through. We might be pitching a show together, so not
Oh,
another
tell him
guy.
John Pittman says hi, and he
Will
might
do.
know who I am. That's another story for another time. But he said that Dana Carvey told him the most talented people are the most nicest, and
Yeah, thank you, pal.
you rank on that because, man, I just sent you a Twitter to ask to sign my book, and then you said yes, and then here we are. We're about this is like the third or fourth time I've met you, and I just you're my hero,
Well,
dude. I mean, that's
thank
just
you,
all I can
John.
say.
That is it's so very kind, and I will never, ever take that for granted. And have the happiest of holidays. Thank you
You
so much
too.
for your time. And
Do you want to send a send-off in case I post this as a podcast?
sure.
All
Okay. Well, John, I hope your first time with me was as much fun as it is for me. However, I now have to go to the LA Free Clinic for a shot, so you might want to pay attention to your first times, okay?
Okay. All right.
Take care, man.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Thank you again for watching. And if you haven't already, get yourself a copy of Rob Paulsen's autobiography, Voice Lessons: How a Couple of Ninja Turtles, Pinky, and an Animaniac Saved My Life, available in paperback and audiobook. Go ahead and like and share this video. If you want to stay caught up, hit that subscribe button and the little bell so you don't miss out on the next meet and greet. See you next time.